This is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for August 28th, 2020. And it is great to be back behind the microphone. Been away for a few weeks and trying to get things squared away where we can be more consistent. And it's a combination of things of being busy at my day job and then all of the different challenges of COVID-19 and just everything being crazy right now. But trying to get things going here where I can at least get a couple new shows each month, if not every week at some point. But got a good one for you today. I recently ran across the reboot of the TV series The World's Toughest Race about 10 years ago or so. Mark Burnett did a show called World's Toughest Race and recently did a reboot. And Sonia Wick is one of the featured team captains on one of the teams. And this year's show is World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji. And I found this on Amazon Prime. It was released, I think, on the 14th of August. And I've been binge watching it over and over ever since. And so I wanted to get someone from the show on to talk about it because I thought that would be... I really enjoy the show and got really into it. So I picked one of the bigger personalities that I could get booked on the show. And so Sonia's going to talk to us a little bit later on. We recorded that interview earlier in the week. So I can tell you it was a fun one and I really think you will enjoy it. So I'd also today would like to talk about, because the last couple of weeks we've had the Democrat National Convention and the Republican Convention back-to-back weeks with the Republicans wrapping up last night, and want to talk a little bit about that today, and also the latest controversial shooting involving a police officer, and of course there's all the racial implications, and you know you've got sports leagues that have canceled or postponed games for so they can protest and all of that going on. So I want to talk a little bit about some of that, but we're going to save that to the end of the show, which is good news for you. If you don't like any of my political rants, I probably won't have a ton of time to get too deep into either one of those subjects, because we've got a pretty good interview coming up, and that's going to take up the most of the show. And that's what I like. I enjoy the interviews, and this one did not disappoint, so I hope you'll enjoy that. I do have a couple of items of local interest to touch on. The first two regarding are coming from, I should say, the VFW Post 4116 here in Rogue River. They weren't sure this was going to be able to happen this year, but it is. At this point, it is scheduled to go on the 15th annual Patriots Run, and that'll be on Saturday, September 12th. There'll be raffles, silent auction, there'll be a breakfast buffet, barbecue lunch, live music, and you can even win a hog. And when I say a hog, I don't mean a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, I mean a pig, a really nice hog that's been donated. So there's all kinds of cool stuff. All of the proceeds benefit their high school scholarship fund. And if you've had students in this district or you've been involved in our school district here, you know the VFW has been very generous with scholarships year after year. And this is one of the ways that they pay for that. If you want to get more information about participating in their Patriots Run, you can call Sherry Prudon at 541-761-1379. And again, that's a really fun time. They do a poker run, and which is the main event, but again, all the other food and music, and it's a fun event, and it's a great cause, getting those scholarships for our local students. So also from the VFW, their national organization Voice of Democracy essay contest has kicked off. That is for students in grades 9 through 12. The essays are presented in both written and audio form, and prizes are given at several levels, the local, regional, state, and at the national level, with the national grand prize being $30,000. So completed entries can be dropped off at the Rogue River VFW Post. They're due before by October 31st, and the forms are available online. I'll try and post a link in the show notes when the show goes up on the website, but the best way probably to deal with this would be, again, to get a hold of the VFW. You can go down there in person, but the person to talk to, again, is Sherry Prudon, and her number, once again, 541-761-1379. And if you happen to be listening not in Rogue River, we're going to have, I'm sure, some people downloading this this radio podcast, if you want to call it that, from other places in the country, and hopefully maybe even some other countries. But if you have a local VFW and you want to get more information, this is a national contest with prizes, again, at every level. So contact your local VFW and get more information there. So that's all the time. Going to be kind of a short first segment here because I want to get right to our interview. So we will take a break here and be back with more Rogue Talk.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and now joining me, Sonia Wick is a wife and a mother, and oh, by the way, a six-time qualifier for the Kona Ironman World Championships, including a second-place finish in her age group in 2014. She was the female overall champion at one of my favorite places, Lake Tahoe, in 2015. She holds multiple Ironman amateur and age group championships. She does some mountain climbing, she does ultra marathons, and when she's feeling a little lazy, she does, you know, half Ironmans, where she's done over 50 of those with 22 age group wins. She's currently featured on the Amazon Prime Series World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji, which I am in love with, by the way. That's hosted by Bear Grylls, where she served as the team captain of Team Iron Cowboy. After all of that, welcome to Rogue Talk, Sonia.
Thank you so much for having me on today. Gosh, you just gave me a glowing introduction.
Well, I tell you, I was trying to pick things out. I mean, I could have gone on longer, but so we'll kind of preface this interview because this show tends to be pretty local, but this one is obviously not. But it's because it's my show, and I get to sometimes share things about, you know, that are happening in my life that I find interesting, and I hope other people will. We were looking for something to watch, and mind you, this whole coronavirus thing is not, I'm still working, my wife is actually still able to work, but we still end up on streaming video looking for something new to watch, and lo and behold, here's an advertisement for the World's Toughest Race, and we're like, oh, well, let's check it out, and we were hooked, and so,
yes. And so
after going through it twice now, I admit, it's only been out for a couple of weeks, and I've already binge-watched it twice. I happened to see you had a podcast, and one thing led to another. We connected on Instagram, and here you are on Oregon's favorite talk show. Well, okay, maybe Rogue River, Oregon's favorite talk show.
I'm happy to be here, and how lucky are we that there's a show out to binge watch now. I feel like I've gone through all the available television, and so I too have been looking forward to the World's Toughest Race coming out because, one, I didn't get to see any footage until you saw footage and I saw footage together. And I haven't had anything to binge watch in a while either.
Yeah, well, and like I said, we haven't needed the binge watching because we've been actually working, unlike a lot of people who are just looking for things to do. But for whatever reason, we've still increased our you know, online streaming, so we came across it. But your story is an interesting one, as are many of the people involved, and we're going to get to that. But I like to take my guests kind of and make it personal, because you know, this is not a paid promotion for the Eco Challenge, but although I would definitely take money for that if they want to come my way. But let's dig into your story. I mentioned at the top, you're a mother, you're a wife, and your story, at least related to Ironman, extreme sports, and now the Eco Challenge, started with the birth of your daughter. And so kind of tell us how that, because you weren't really, I mean, you were a runner in high school, I guess, and maybe a little bit in college, is if I was right about that. But so tell us how you ended up from being, you know, a part-time runner in high school to being a top triathlete and now in this, you know, TV series on Amazon Prime.
I mean, I grew up kind of outdoorsy in terms of we camped and did a little bit of backpacking when I was young. I ran in high school, cross country and track, and that kind of kept me fit. And after college, I ran a little bit in college, but I didn't really cut it. I just couldn't really adhere to how stringent the training was, and kind of fell out of it. I did a little bit of rock climbing. I always tried to kind of stay active, hiking, that sort of thing. And then I had my daughter in 2005. And it was about a year after having my daughter that I remember just one day looking in the mirror and kind of looking at the woman I had become. It had been a hard year. And I remember thinking of myself as kind of an outdoorsy chick, but not really seeing that chick looking back at me. And it was a moment. I had this moment where I looked at myself and was like, where'd you go? You know, where's this girl that you thought you were? And that was kind of the catalyst for me to start trying to lose some weight and start trying. I got my husband's mountain bike out of the garage, and he's 6'4". So I had to lower the seat all the way down to the bottom. And I bought one of those little trailers that I could put my kid in. And I figured out how to attach that thing to his mountain bike. And we were kind of off at that point. I was got my freedom back, and Annie and I would travel around and go on big biking errands. We'd go to the bank, and then we'd go to the store, and then we'd go to the playground. And so kind of her and I together just started exercising. She liked it. She was a busy baby, and she liked to be moving a lot. And so I thought, wow, if I could, you know, lose a bit of the weight, I could start running again. And I kind of got to that place where I could run again. And then I thought, geez, I never learned to swim, but I mean, I'm only one sport away from a triathlon if I could take some swim lessons. So I went to my local, you know, athletic club and hired a swim instructor to teach me as an adult how to swim. I hadn't learned. And then I was like, okay, I could do one of these things. And so I think it was 2007. My daughter was born in 2005. 2007, I signed up for my first sprint triathlon, and I was so relieved to make it through the swim alive, you know, in this scary weight. And took off on the bike. I felt great. And when I finished the run, I remember looking at my husband and saying, that was the funnest thing I've ever done in my entire life, and I think I could be really good at that. And he just saw the joy in my face, and he kind of felt like, wow, I've got my wife back. And from that point forward, we just doubled down and allowed me to really chase my dreams. So it started from that first race, and I went full bore ahead. So 2 years later, 2009, I did my first Ironman distance race, which is 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then a marathon, 26.2-mile run. And I missed qualifying for Kona, the world championships, by one place. And I was like, this is what I'm made to do. You know, my first Ironman, I only missed it by one place, and it lit a fire under me. And that fire lasted for the better part of, you know, 7-8 years as I eventually qualified for Kona. I tried to win my age group at Kona, and in 2014, I got second. So I really just clawed my way over the years, year after year after year, up to the very top of the age group ranks in the sport. And it was it was quite the journey. It was quite the way for my daughter to grow up, going to all these crazy Ironmans all over the world.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. And it, I mean, it's got to be a kind of a grueling training schedule, I would think. I mean, for me, it would totally be the swimming, and I don't think I would have ever gotten to where you are. I'm a lousy swimmer, even when I've tried. So I don't know how you triathletes do it.
I was a lousy swimmer for a long time. And I just had to reframe it. Like that first year I swam, when I could barely make it to the other side of the pool, I just had to say to myself, okay, Sonia, you're basically like six. And then the next year when I was a little bit better, I was like, okay, Sonia, you're seven. You're 7 years old now in the pool. So I had to just reframe my expectations. But the swimming was great for me because the pool had like a kiddie area and lifeguards. And so a lot of times the swimming was one of the easier things for me to get in because my daughter would come and play in the pool and she, you know, she'd be the one begging to stay instead of me being the one begging to stay.
Yeah, so you became this. I mean, really. I mean, I've got a sheet in front of me that's got a list of your accomplishments in mostly in Ironman, although there's some other things too. You got to this point, and I heard you in an interview say that the second place that you got at one of the Kona World Championships was really a win for you, like a win for you. Explain that, why that was, and then kind of where that takes you, because not too long after years and years of success, you kind of have a breakdown. And so kind of take us through the mindset of how that second place was a win to you, and then where does that mindset go to where you're having a breakdown, you're having to close a business? Take us through that part, and then we'll jump off to the Eco Challenge.
Awesome. Yeah, this is where it gets really fun. So when I went to Kona in 2010, my first year, I kind of debuted there with like a 15th place finish in my age group. And my coach at the time, he was like, you could win your age group at this race. You could be a world champion. And that was really enticing to me, that idea. You know, I was like, not too many years before that, a kind of overweight mom who had lost herself, and now somebody's telling me I could be a world champion. And I just attached myself to that as being the thing in the world I wanted the most, more than anything. And it's one of those things where sometimes you set a goal and it's so big and you don't really even understand what you're setting. It seems really great and someone wants it for you and thinks you could get it. That was the state I was in when I set that goal. You know, it took me 5 years of full commitment to Ironman. I would have to qualify for Kona and by winning my age group at an Ironman, and then I'd go to Kona and try to do my best. And the second year, I got up to 10th place. And the third year, I had a horrible race and went down to 19th place. And the fourth year, I came back really great and got 6th place. So it was this labor of love where every year I had to be prepared for this race and this hope that I could somehow have the best day of my life to win my age group. And in 2014, I had the best race of my life and I got second. And it honestly felt like a win. I mean, after going through the journey I had gone through the 5 years prior and learning all these things about myself and about how hard of a goal this actually was, second felt like first. My you get an umiki bowl when you get on the podium at Kona. It's a wooden Hawaiian bowl. And I remember looking at the lady next to me who was standing on the top of the podium, which was only about 4 inches higher anyway, and her bowl was just slightly larger than my bowl. And I thought, you know, like, this is pretty darn, this feels like a win to me. So I didn't really have that personality of like, no, I'm going to come back and I'm going to go for number one. It was like, it took so long to get to number two, and number two came at such a great race. But the next morning, even though I felt satisfied on the podium and I was like, wow, this is it. This is what I've been going for. The next morning, I remember waking up in our Airbnb and looking over and my wooden bowl was on the nightstand. And the first feeling I had was, this wooden bowl is empty. Like, they gave me an empty bowl. And that's about how I feel. I wasn't changed. I wasn't this different person. I was still you know, the once overweight mom who had to get herself out of that. I still was the girl who had the breakdowns and the tough times. Nothing changed that next day. The accomplishment didn't really get me anything. And that was a big moment for me because I started to entertain the idea of, well, what now? Like, what am I meant for? What am I really supposed to be doing? Surely life can't just be about chasing podiums year after year after year. That's not going to get it. And so with that kind of in my mind, I didn't really feel like I could just go back to Kona another year after that. And my coach didn't want me to go to Kona the next year. And so I thought, well, I'm a type A kind of person. I've got a little bit of a break. I'm not going to go to Kona. I will just build my coaching business bigger. And so I launched, you know, full steam ahead, Ironman triathlete that I am, into building up my coaching business. And I had always coached athletes, like 10 to 20 a year through Ironman. But this, I decided, we're going to go big, like 150 athletes, 7 assistant coaches. And I hated every minute of it. The being the boss and managing lots of different personalities, all the while trying to find a business model that worked in a very competitive environment, wore me out. And I started having panic attacks, and I retired from triathlon because I couldn't do both. And so I was kind of slowly stripping away everything that I loved just to dive more into this thing that I really wasn't doing a great job at. And it all came to head in 2017. I had a really bad day in my business, and I'd had a series of multiple panic attacks that day. And at the end of the day, I had a panic attack that I couldn't get control of, and I passed out in an auto body parking lot.
Oh, goodness.
And my husband called the ambulance, and I got taken to the ER. And when I kind of came out of that situation, I just was shattered. We closed the business down the next week. And I just healed and went through some pretty major depression after that, about 4 months worth of pretty major depression. And that was in 2017. So kind of the heels of that was really learning through therapy and help and friends and time and journaling and you name it, what I'm about and what I really want to get out of this one precious life that I have. So that's what really led me to the World's Toughest Race.
Yeah, and I read that, so the World's Toughest Race almost served as kind of a restart for you, and it sounds like exactly what you're saying. That's the perfect description, because you kind of had a choice, and in a way, you made the wrong choice. You had a choice between continuing your training and doing triathlons or to work on your coaching, and you chose the one that didn't really fuel you the way that the doing the you know, whatever sport it happened to be, whether it was triathlons or mountain climbing or whatever. So this was
really what I needed was door number three. You know, I realized, like, chasing podiums, that was door number one. Been there, done that. You know, building this coaching business wasn't great at that door number two. I needed to find door number three.
Yeah, it sounds like it, and it sounds like you have. I mean, we're gonna get to kind of what's next for you after let's talk about the Eco Challenge. But it sounds like, you know, that's the direction you're moving toward as your next kind of training and passion. And believe me, I can understand it for sure. That's why I'm sitting here as a volunteer. I've developed this passion for this, and I do some sports broadcasting as well, which is really fun. So I understand that needing to fuel your passion type of thing. So I'm glad you're on the other side of it. That's good
too.
To hear. I haven't had the issues to the extreme nature that you're describing, but I know about panic attacks, not only personally, but people in my family. And it's not a pleasant thing, and it's
no,
nice.
Really scary.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that you're getting on the other side of that. So let's go ahead.
Tools. Yeah, there are a lot of tools, and I didn't know about those, and I needed to learn about those, and the whole journey of kind of coming out of a breakdown is, you know, you wait for a long time, going, where's the silver lining? Well, where's the silver lining? And once you do get on the other side of it, it never happens as quickly as you want. But once you are there, you do look back and realize, wow, like that time in my life was actually one of the biggest gifts ever to have experienced, because I now get to move forward in such a more solid place of understanding about who I am and what keeps me healthy. You just have to work for it.
Yeah, and a lot of people they'll spend their time near the bottom, but they never hit the bottom, so they don't ever have any reason to bounce back up. And I think they just stay stagnant, and I think, yeah, it's a horrible experience, and contemplating suicide and those kinds of things are not a place anyone wants to be. But the bounce back allows you to see, you know, it gives you that perspective. And so, yeah, I definitely salute you for being able to recognize that and to use it as a, you know, a launching point to go, hey, I'm restarting my life in a positive way. And that's what brought you to the Eco Challenge Fiji. Now, this is the first television event. These adventure racing has been going on for a long time, and it's new to me, but it was also new to you.
Yes.
Tell us how you ended up on a team in the biggest race, the biggest adventure race in the world to this date.
Right.
And then I've got a few things about the race, because again, I've binge watched it twice now, so I've got some questions, but let's see how you ended up in it, and then we'll find out what your experience was.
Awesome. Well, the Eco Challenge was Mark Burnett's little baby. It's the first Emmy he ever won, and he did six editions of it in the late 90s, early 2000s. And they aired on the Discovery Channel and a few other places. And I remember watching them 17 years ago, 20 years ago, and thinking, wow, that's amazing. So I already did have that little, like, I knew what Eco Challenge was. I knew what the sport of adventure racing was. And I was on Facebook, and I saw a post, and it was about Eco Challenge is returning. It's the reboot. Mark Burnett, he's pulled in Bear Grylls. And there's a little video. It said, apply now. And there's a little video. So I watched the video and reminisced about all the old coverage I had remembered seeing 20 years ago. And at the end of the video, it said, this is the race that eats Iron Man for breakfast.
Oh, there's the challenge right there, right?
I just lit up. Here I am in this place in my life where I'm not doing anything. I mean, I'm walking on the beach and running in my local trails, but I'm looking for the next thing. And then this thing that I had such positive memories about and kind of fear of basically called me out. And that was it. I knew that moment. I had to put together a team. I knew my team had to be Ironman athletes. We all needed to not know what we were doing, because that's the angle that we could push to Mark Burnett and ask him to let us into the race. You know, you called us out, let us in. So that's how I went out and assembled my team. I had at one point coached a man named James Lawrence, and he's known as the Iron Cowboy. And he did 50 Ironmans in 50 days in 50 states, and has a documentary and is a motivational speaker. So I figured that might, like, perk, you know, up Mark Burnett, and he might say, oh, okay, this guy's got a following. He's kind of there. They are Team Ironman. And, they went for it. We applied that way. We pulled in a few other Ironman athletes that were close to James. And we didn't know anything, but they accepted us. And I don't know if they thought we would do well or if they thought we'd make great TV when we did horribly. But yeah, either way, when you watch the show, you can find out.
Yeah, for sure. And I would encourage everybody to watch it. And we're not going to get to anywhere near as many of the things as I would love to ask you. If this was an hour or 2 hour podcast interview, I'd be able to get to everything, but we won't. So let's just quickly hit on a couple of things before I have to let you go here. So we'll grab my page here. I said in our pre-interview, I don't use a lot of prepared questions, but there's just a couple of things that really caught my eye or caught my ear during the race. So let's start with some of the fun things going on. First of all, you'll have to tell the listeners what it is, but how awful are the Billy Billies?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So this race is a 10-day race. Or 11, or 5, depending on how fast you are. For us, it was 10. And there's 10 different sports that we're doing. Once the gun goes off or the conch shell gets blown, we are continuously racing. So if you stop to sleep, that's on you. If you don't sleep, that's on you. But the race clock never stops. And we are sailing, outrigger canoeing, trekking, climbing fixed ropes, we're paddleboarding, we're mountain biking, you name it, we're whitewater rafting. And one of the sports they had us do was we had to fashion this bamboo raft with basically paracord and chunks of bamboo. And they put us on this river that we had to go down. For us, it took 13 hours on these billy rafts. And you paddle them with a piece of bamboo. So you're not paddling. Like, you don't have a paddle. You're pretty much using a toothpick.
So wait a minute. You spent 13 hours on a bamboo raft with a stick in your hand.
With a toothpick, yeah. And they don't, you can't tell them to go left or right. Like, there's no steering these things. You're pretty much at a whim. You can't make them go faster if you want to go faster. And every once in a while, the river would pick up steam and kind of have a fast, you know, bumpy section. You'd just be on this bamboo raft, hoping you didn't run into some tree that's in the water or somebody else that's out there. And we did the entire billy section at night. So we got on them about 8 p.m. at night. It was dark, and we got off them at 9 a.m. the next morning. So it was a very scary night of hoping we didn't get tipped off these things and die.
Yeah, it's crazy. Those things looked like just the most frustrating thing you could ever do. And there's an interesting story about the Billy's in the first episode of your podcast, and we will plug that at the end. I would encourage everybody to go listen to it. Cool. First of all, Courtney Holm was a delight, but the stories of the Billy's were really good. So I'll make that as a little tease for people to go listen to your podcast. And it's called Tales of Toughness. If you just can't wait, go look it up right now, but we'll plug it again at the end. So I'm going to run out of time, but I really want to get to a couple more. Let's quickly hit these. Now, the Billy's, I think most people struggled with, but another thing most people struggled with was after Vuwa Falls, which incidentally was the reason I commented to you on social media that you were a rock star, because you really made your team look bad. I mean, you motored up there like I couldn't believe. But after that was probably the biggest surprise to a lot of people, because every team was struggling at the so-called swimming section, which you didn't really do a lot of swimming, except you did. You figured out a way to wear your backpack that would help you so you could actually swim, which also helped you stay warmer, and most of the team suffered. I mean, it almost broke the team from Spain. They had one member had Fran had hypothermia, and it almost broke his teammate Emma Roca, who's just a stud. I mean,
amazing.
She was dying out there, just didn't know if she was going to finish. And here you guys are. It was one of the most lighthearted moments of the race, at least what they showed us of your team.
Yeah.
So quickly tell us about how that went.
Yeah. I mean, I love that whole section. Nobody told me it was the crux of the race. Like, there wasn't a PSA, oh, this is the hardest part of the race. I just thought it was fantastic. It was cooler. We had been really hot through a lot of the race, and so this part was nice and cold. I like cold weather. And we came to a section of the course where we had been following this river for hours, probably like 13 hours, rock hopping. And then we got, and climbing up the falls, and then rock hopping some more, climbing more falls. And then we got to this place where there were just no more rocks to hop on. And there's vegetation on both sides of the river, and it's just a pool. So we, I mean, I laughed. Oh, I guess we have to swim now. So we get ourselves in and swimming. And to me, I'm like, we're triathletes. Like, we know how to swim. And so that was my kind of mindset. I'm looking back at the boys going, we're swimmers, let's swim. But quickly realized, well, we have all our gear on. We've got helmets on, we've got backpacks on, we're in running shoes, you know, and I looked back and everyone's backpacks were kind of, we had dry bags inside of them and so to keep everything dry. And so they're kind of floating and kind of hitting your helmet, and then that's kind of compromising your vision. And so I started loosening the straps on my backpack to get it away from my helmet, and then I realized if I took it off, flipped it upside down, and put the waist belt back around my waist, then my backpack would be kind of pointed downwards instead of upwards. And when I did that, it just lifted my whole bottom section up, and suddenly I was more vertical or horizontal in the water, and I could swim. And so I immediately was like, guys, you gotta flip your backpack around. And I turn around, and I look at all the guys, and I just get the deer in the headlights look. Like, I'm speaking to them, but they are not doing anything about it.
And they're so, like, we're dying back here. Leave us alone.
Yeah. They were like doggy paddling. And I'm like, no, like, we can swim. So it was one of those, just a mom moment. And, you know, the guys, like, they helped me out a million times in the same exact way that didn't make the coverage. But my mom moment was to go over, take off their backpack, like when you zip a kid's jacket up, take off their backpack, flip it around, put it back around their waist, and then kind of push them and say, go, swim, and then go to the next guy, do the same, you know, kind of get my, at that one point in the race, get my baby ducks, like, all in formation and off and swimming. So, yeah, it was a good moment for me in the race. It's, I had plenty of low moments, but it was really nice to see one of my high moments highlighted in the race. Somewhere where I was able to help the guys and think on my feet.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It was fun because they just showed team after team struggling and suffering, and here comes Team Ironman or Iron Cowboy rather, and you guys are just like, I mean, you're just what is the word I'm looking for? It's a stark contrast from the first time we saw you during Eco Challenge, where, you know, you're laying against the tire of a truck and suffering and doubting yourself.
So
and boy, what a difference, you know.
And
the whole thing was really inspirational to me. I mean, there's several moments throughout it that you know, brought me to tears, and I don't usually admit that. Of course,
yeah, me too.
You know, there were many inspirational teams, and I'll tell you the one that touched me the most, and I want you to kind of tell me what, even if it's something we didn't see on the TV show, you know, something inspirational you saw during the race. For me, when Andreas Duarte of Team Hombres de Maíz, his bike broke, and he was desperately looking for a replacement. And the moment when he got the word that he had a replacement bike, Team Peak Traverse was out of the race, and they loaned him a bike. And the moment where he just broke down, I mean, he was elated that he was going to be able to get a bike and race, but he felt the weight of the world lift off his shoulders. What's it like to have that weight, carry that weight? And then, you know, was there a moment either for your team or that you saw from another team that, I mean, I was in tears. I could feel for him because he was carrying the weight of his team on his shoulders.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about this race is that if you lose one of your teammates, you're all out. This is an all or none. And so every person on the team has that equal responsibility, and they know that if something happens because of them, the dreams of all of their other teammates are going to be crushed. And it's so heavy when you're suddenly having a down moment like that. One of my favorite stories is Sylvia Greer on Team Sundance Kids. She crashed her mountain bike coming into camp 2, so pretty early on, and tore her ACL, MCL, and meniscus. I mean, like 3 ligaments in her knee.
Yikes.
And her knee swelled up to 4 times the size. And that was the moment in her team's race that they really decided they wanted to finish. Like, they were kind of going along, having fun, and then the adversity hit, and suddenly Sylvia's knee is just demolished. And from that point on, they became a team, because now it was really the team versus Sylvia's knee, and to get the team to overcome Sylvia's knee. And they did finish. They finished the race. They were a fantastic team, and you know, she has had to rehab that knee to this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, seeing teams like that, is like most people would just be out. You know, they'd be in surgery 3 days later. But that team decided, no, like, this is now the adversity we've been given, and we're going to fight tooth and nail to overcome that. And I watched them lift her over rocks and, you know, support and rally as a team. And I watched her worry that her knee would take out her team and the stress that came with that. So you see both sides of it.
Yeah, there was tons of inspiration, and I wish we had more time. I'd love to talk to you about so many of them, because there was just so much adversity that people overcame just to even have a team. It was really inspiring, and I really enjoyed it. The show, again, is the World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji. You can find it on Amazon streaming video, Amazon Prime. Couple of quick questions as I let you go, and thank you so much for your time. I know I've taken more than I probably should have.
Oh no, it's great.
I appreciate you coming on. Are you going to do Eco Challenge Patagonia?
I've applied.
Okay.
I've applied.
So at least you're moving in that direction. Now, another little bird told me you could be doing Expedition Oregon. Is that true?
I would love to. I applied for Patagonia with a different team, not with Team Iron Cowboy.
Uh-huh.
I think Team Iron Cowboy has applied with, you know, people local to them. And so if I get in, I will definitely go to Oregon with my new team. And if I don't get in, I will look for another team to do Oregon with. And if I can't find another team, I will volunteer. That's my new MO. It's like, if I don't get in, find another team. If I can't find another team, volunteer. So I will be at Expedition Oregon and at Eco Challenge Patagonia one way or another.
Okay, well, I'm too old and too slow to adventure race, but if you need someone to drive the truck, I will make the trek.
Good job. Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. I might take you up on that.
Keep us updated on social media so I can harass you about that, because I live here in Oregon, and I would love to come see you if you make that trip.
We'll make it happen.
I might just have to come and watch. So that's all the time we're going to have. I've stolen more than I was allowed, but I'm so happy to have you here. Again, go watch the TV series. Her podcast is Tales of Toughness. You can find that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And Sonia, plug your social media. And again, thank you for being on Rogue Talk today. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm on the internet at GoSonia. So GoSonia on Instagram or Twitter, GoSonia.com. And if you have something you think I need to know, definitely reach out to me and send me a message. I respond to every single message I get, because this is a lot of fun.
Yep. Well, I'm going to continue following you, and I may just have you back, because this has been a blast.
So, let's do it.
So we will take a break here and be back with more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and I want to once again give a big thank you to Sonia Wick for coming on Rogue Talk today. And again, you can reach her. All of her social media is, you can find her at GoSonia, S-O-N-J-A, GoSonia. She's gotten really busy with social media since the release of the show. She's adding some new things to her website and things that she's offering. So you want to check that out. Again, and the show, go watch the show. It'll give you some more context to the interview, of course, but it's just a really fun show. And, you know, if you think, in fact, I saw there's a mention of the idea of reality TV being involved in this show. And of course, it's edited, and they're going to show you what they want you to see. There's no doubt about that. But this is not reality TV. This is not contrived. You know, we know that they fudge things a little bit on some of the shows like Survivor and, you know, even Big Brother or whatever. This is a real competition. The Eco Challenge goes on year after year, regardless of the TV show. The TV show is a reboot of an old show, but it's, again, it is edited. They do edit it, you know, to show you what they want, but the race is a real thing. And again, there was she talked about that on her podcast, the most recent episode released yesterday, and they made a mention of that. So check out Go Sonia, and you can check out her podcast, Tales of Toughness, anywhere where you get podcasts, and check out the show World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji on Amazon Prime Video. And so thanks again, Sonia. So got a little bit of time left. A couple of things I wanted to talk about. First of all, the DNC and the RNC happened back to back the last 2 weeks. Finished up last night with a campaign-style speech for President Trump. a lot of the media having a fit that it was held at the White House and, you know, making all kinds of stuff. And, you know, with the COVID thing, and I mean, they couldn't go 2 minutes of coverage on the major media, you know, networks without mentioning that, oh, so many of those people in the crowd aren't wearing a mask and whatever. I'm so over the virtue signaling about the masks. Look, people can make their own choices. I don't want to hear any more about the, well, you're not just protecting yourself. Why do we assume that everybody's going to go home and kill grandma? I'm a very responsible person. If I choose to go out and I'm with people and they don't care whether I'm wearing a mask, if I choose not to wear a mask, that's my choice. That's between me and my family. I don't live with grandma, so that's really not going to be a problem. I do spend time with my grandkids. I do have a wife that takes the COVID probably more seriously than I do, so I wear my mask. It's mandated in our state to go into stores, and some stores enforce it more strictly than others, but they can get in trouble if they don't. So, look, I wear my mask. I'm not anti-mask, but all the virtue signaling around the masks and the TV reporters wearing them around their neck and over their ears, it's got to stop. It's just stupid. And it will stop. It'll stop on the first week of November when the election is over, because a lot of it, I think, is tied to that. But anyhow, so they getting all upset about the convention or the Trump, you know, being at the White House. We have COVID restrictions and things we can and can't do. I have no problem with it. He's the president of the United States. It's not, you don't add any credence to your speech because you're at the White House. He has extra credence in his speech because he's the president, not because he's standing in front of the White House. So, you know, it's a little bit of hyperbole coming from a lot of the media related to that. There were some stark differences and a lot of similarities. I give Joe Biden a little bit of credit in his speech at the end of the DNC. He called out the president on a lot of stuff, but he did it really mostly without actually mentioning the president. I think that was probably a good tactful move on Joe Biden's part. I didn't find his speech particularly effective, but on the other hand, you know, President Trump's speech was more of a campaign event than the Republican closing. You know, he's the incumbent president, so to a certain extent, you're going to get a campaign speech because he's running for re-election. But it may have been a little over the top. So there's plenty of things you can pick at from either side. I thought the DNC kind of missed an opportunity. Apparently, they've never been to a Zoom meeting because Zoom meetings are really lousy. And that's basically what their convention was. It was one big Zoom meeting. I mean, they have the vast majority of Hollywood in their corner, and the production value is really kind of lousy. The celebrities that they brought on to kind of, I don't know, host, if you want to call it that, weren't really good. Some really ill-timed jokes, and not really that funny when they tried to make jokes. It was kind of sad. I was disappointed. I mean, they could do so much better. They have all the connections to do it. And, you know, on the Republican side, there was a couple of the speeches that were given in front of an empty building. Now, the last couple of days, there was a crowd involved, but Donald Trump Jr.'s speech was pretty good, but it was a little bit geared toward being in front of a crowd. And so he, in fact, they took some shots at him from the other side, you know, speculating he might have been on drugs or something. That kind of stuff is stupid. But he was very excitable, which would be great if you were in front of a crowd that's reacting to you and you're working off the crowd. But it came off a little strange in front of an empty, you know, empty venue. So I've already talked about the conventions actually more than I wanted to. Finally, I just want to say something about all of this controversy with the shootings, the most recent one in Kenosha. You know, of course, you had George Floyd. the one thing that I'm seeing with all of this is we have become a very reactionary society. I have a rule with myself, and I've heard a couple of different hosts kind of, you know, use a similar rule. I don't react to these things right away because the facts don't all come out right at the beginning. It sometimes takes a little time, and the same thing's happening with this latest one. The Jacob Blake shooting, we don't have all the information. The investigation will dig into everything. So nobody can say whether it was legally justified or not. When the first video comes out, yeah, it looks pretty bad. And we all kind of, ooh, you know, that's not good. But then as more facts come out, I notice the narrative changing, but nobody will backtrack on things that they said. They just try and shift their narrative. I see it on social media and whatever. Look, the easiest way to deal with this is don't react to stuff right away, or at least with some, you know, go into it with a little bit of caution. But unfortunately, people just want to jump on the bandwagon from whichever side they're on. And I would just ask people, let's be a little more introspective. Let's be a little more measured and not jump to conclusions, because so many times we've been proven to be wrong. So that is all the time we've got. Thanks for being with us today. Everybody, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice. 94.3 The Bridge. Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.